Welcome to another episode of the Blockchain Debate Podcast, where consensus is optional, but proof of thought is required. I'm your host, Richard Yan. Today's motion is ZK Rollup has a better set of security scalability trade-off than optimistic Rollup. Rollups are a class of Layer 2 Ethereum scalability solutions. They allow an off-chain aggregation of transactions inside a smart contract. Users can transact inside the contract with security guarantees, and they will settle to the main chain at some future point. So ZK and optimistic rollups are different in the way they ensure the validity of these transactions that are being kept off-chain. The ZK approach uses math. It bundles the transactions, compresses them, and adds a zero-knowledge proof that indicates the validity of the state transitions. When the transaction is sent to the main chain, the block is verified by the attached zero-knowledge proof. The optimistic approach uses economic incentives. So an operator publishes a state route that isn't constantly checked by the rollup smart contract. Instead, everybody hopes that the state transition is correct. Now, other operators or users can challenge the validity of the transactions, revert the incorrect block, and slash malicious operators. We compared the two approaches from the standpoint of security, usability, capital efficiency of exits, and more. Today's debaters are John Adler and Alex Kluchowski. John is the proposer of the original construction of the optimistic rollup, and Alex is implementing a ZK rollup at Matter Labs. Our co-host, James Prestwich, is a security consultant and auditor for Solidity Contracts, among many other things. If you're into crypto and like to hear two sides of the story, be sure to also check out our previous episodes. We feature some of the best-known thinkers in the space. If you would like to debate or want to nominate someone, please DM me at BlockDebate on Twitter. Please note that nothing in our podcast should be construed as financial advice. I hope you enjoy listening to this debate. Let's dive right in. Welcome to the debate. Consensus optional, proof of thought required. I'm your host, Richard Yan. Today's motion, ZK Rollup has a better set of security scalability trade-off than optimistic rollup. To my metaphorical left is Alex Kluchowski, arguing for the motion. He agrees that ZK Rollup has a better set of security scalability trade-off than optimistic rollup. To my metaphorical right is John Adler, arguing against the motion. He disagrees that ZK Rollup has a better set of security scalability trade-off than optimistic rollup. In my metaphorical middle is James Prestwich, who will be co-hosting this debate. I'm super excited to have you join the show. Welcome.
It's great to be here.
Hello.
Here's a bow for the two debaters and our co-host. Alex Kluchowski is co-founder of Matter Labs, currently working on scaling Ethereum with ZK Snarks. He was previously CTO of Paul Camper, an online platform for sharing camper vans and caravans in Europe. John Adler is co-founder of Lazy Ledger and Fuel Labs. He is the original proposer of the optimistic rollup construction. He previously did layer 2 research at Consensus. Interestingly, he is a self-proclaimed blockchain skeptic. James Prestwich founded cross-chain solution company Suma, subsequently acquired by the layer 1 blockchain firm Celo. He previously founded StoreJ, a decentralized cloud storage provider. We normally have 3 rounds: opening statements, host questions, and audience questions. But there are so many audience questions that we're incorporating them into the host questions, and James will be doing the heavy lifting during the host questions round. Currently, our Twitter poll shows that 46% agree with the motion and 21% disagree with the motion. After the release of this recording, we'll also have a post-debate poll. Between the two polls, the debater with a bigger change in percentage votes in his or her favor wins the debate. Okay, Alex, please go ahead and get started with your opening statement. And please make sure to include an introduction of the ZK rollup in your opening statement. Go ahead, Alex.
Sure. Thank you, Richard. ZK rollup is the most exciting scaling technology I'm familiar with because, unlike all other scaling technologies, it actually does scaling. So with the application of heavy math, zero-knowledge proofs, very interesting family of cryptographic protocols, we can achieve a compression of computation. So we can perform a generation of a proof of integrity of very large algorithm, which can encompass as much as all financial transactions in the world, which you can verify from your mobile phone is in 30 milliseconds. So this is a technological breakthrough which will bring, in my opinion, very soon, mainstream adoption to all public decentralized blockchains. This is actually the only technology which can do it without making the trade-offs on the infamous scalability trilemma. And I would go as far as to say that the statement should be even harsher. I would say that ZK rollups is superior technologically in practically every dimension, on every metric, compared to optimistic rollup. So there's been some things in the past where optimistic rollups were better, but this is currently not the case anymore because we had tremendous progress on zero knowledge proofs in general and ZK rollups specifically over the course of past 2 years, especially this year. And this is going to be a very interesting development to watch because potentially by the time optimistic rollups are ready for production, they might just be an obsolete technology.
So John, please give your opening statement and make sure to include an introduction of the optimistic rollup as well.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks, Alex. I will try to do my best here to also briefly explain ZK rollups before talking about optimistic rollups. But for the opening statement, optimistic rollups are probably the, in my opinion, the second most exciting avenue or direction for scaling blockchains today. The first is not ZK rollups, spoiler alert. They allow us to essentially get most of the benefits of sharding, which you may have heard is being proposed on systems like Serenity, sometimes called ETH2, and other chains like Polkadot and Near and so on are proposing to do sharded execution. Optimistic rollups essentially allow us to get all the benefits of that without having to wait for full-blown sharding at the base layer. We can do it substantially sooner, within on the order of months, not years, as the meme would go. And it allows us to do this kind of sharding with relatively few constraints. The only constraint currently for optimistic rollups that are built on top of Ethereum is that you need to be able to verify a fraud proof in the EVM, which in some ways is actually a fairly big constraint, but in theory, you're relatively unconstrained in what you can do. And this is as opposed to when you use zero knowledge proofs, you generally have some pretty strong constraints on what specific type of execution model you can have. Although I'm sure we're going to discuss this point further into the call. Brief overview of how ZK rollups and optimistic rollups work. ZK rollups being substantially simpler, so I'll start with those. Essentially, in a ZK rollup, you collect a bunch of transactions that would go to your rollup. You create a zero knowledge validity proof that, yes, these transactions are valid and they cause a valid state change from a previous state to a next state. And then you post all of this data onto an Ethereum smart contract. Since you're using a validity proof, you don't have to worry about any rollbacks or anything like that. Just as soon as a contract sees this blob of transactions, it verifies the proof, which it can do in exponentially lower time. And then you just immediately know it's valid. Optimistic rollups are a bit more complicated. So the way fraud proofs work is that you see a claim, and then if the claim has not been disputed after some timeout, then you consider that claim valid. This is how fraud proofs work in general. So in the context of rollups is you have someone create a block, post that block to an Ethereum contract, and then if a fraud proof has not been posted against that block for some timeout, then you consider the block valid. So there is a kind of higher latency before the contract can consider the block valid. And beyond this, you can also have optimistic rollups with interactive verification games, which we won't really cover here, but that's the high-level description of both ZK and optimistic rollups.
Great. Thank you for the opening statements. Let's move on to round two, which is a bit of a free-for-all. The host will be asking questions, and James will be doing most of the questions from this point on. James, do you want to take over?
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, Richard. I think we have a good overview of the different technologies from the opening statements. And I want to start with an audience question from Mark Tinaway, who's an engineer at Optimism. And Mark asks, for each debater, what is the best part of your opponent's technology? Let's start with Alex.
Yeah, I think that the best part of optimistic rollups is actually this optimist setting and optimism mood, which it was radiating throughout the last year, because it kept the community hopeful that the solution for Ethereum problems will be there. So while ZK rollups was in this kind of R&D discovery mode, how do we solve generic programmability? It was not very clear how quickly this can happen. Whereas optimistic rollups offered a relatively straightforward solution. And I think it was very beneficial for the entire community to just have the certainty that at least some solution will be there in the near term.
Interesting. John?
Sure. I like Alex's point that, you know, scaling optimistic rollups allowed us to believe that scaling was right around the corner, because that's, you know, supposedly sharding with Serenity was supposed to be also around the corner. But more to the point, I think one of the best parts, there's two really interesting things about ZK rollups. The first is that you can prove that a computation was valid using exponentially less work, which is very useful if you are doing a very large amount of computation and a very small amount of state transitions. The second thing that ZK rollups are good at, and validity proofs in general, is low latency light clients. And if you consider the rollup contract that's on-chain as a type of light client in some ways, because it doesn't execute transactions, it means that you can have light clients with a good security guarantees with low latency, which allows you to do things like atomic composable transactions between a ZK rollup and a contract in layer one, and it allows you to quickly withdraw non-liquid tokens.
Interesting. So you would say that one of the primary benefits of ZK rollups is the low latency and how it interacts with other contracts on layer one.
I would say latency is a loaded term. It's latency once you post a ZK rollup block is, because there's, you know, zero block latency between being able to post a ZK rollup block and being able to withdraw funds. You can do it in the same block. Mm-hmm. While with optimistic rollups, you probably need at least one block of latency, which means that you can't do something like, I don't know, flash loan or something between the two systems, which you probably could do with a lot of work between a ZK rollup and a main layer one chain.
Yeah, I think speaking of latency and flash loans and atomic transactions leads into another audience question. Lean the Bean wanted to hear about finality in the rollup. How long does it take optimistic rollup to achieve finality from a user perspective, and how does it achieve that?
Sure. So I guess this question is directed at me first. Finality is also a loaded term, unfortunately.
Are there any non-loaded terms?
It's less about loaded versus non-loaded as it is, let's try and break it down into its fundamental components, if you're okay with that. Sure. So in terms of finality, first of all, how would we define finality? It's the time it takes before a transaction, you can be guaranteed that is not going to be reverted.
With negligible probability.
Yeah, and Bitcoin is probabilistic finality, which is you add some probabilities there under certain assumptions, under the assumption that the majority of hash rate or validators are honest, then, you know, the time to finality is the time that after this time you can be ensured that this transaction, once it's included on chain, won't be reverted. So we also have to break this down in terms of latency to first confirmation. Unlike channels, which have immediate or instant finality as soon as you get some consensus on a state update in the channel, rollups need to post their blocks on chain. So a rollup by itself will always be at least as slow as the main chain. You can't have 0.4 second confirmations in a rollup. You can do other stuff, having bonded aggregators or put up some bond to say that they're going to have faster finality, but it's not really finality. It's more there's some economics there. And once you introduce these economics, things get complicated. So, you know, we kind of have to consider two things. The first is, what is the latency to first confirmation for a transaction in an optimistic rollup? And the second is, what is the time to finality once it's on-chain? So the latency to first confirmation for an optimistic rollup is basically the first Ethereum block that can be mined. There are no proofs to generate. As soon as an aggregator collects an optimistic rollup block, they can put it on-chain. So latency to first confirmation is around 6 seconds with no further caveats. other than there should be sufficient transaction throughput to merit posting an optimistic rollup block every 6 seconds or 12 seconds. The time to finality after it's posted on chain is immediate, instant. As soon as a valid optimistic rollup block has been posted on chain, it is finalized. It will not be reverted so long as it is valid. And this is distinct from the withdrawal latency. The withdrawal latency is not part of finality. It is something different. And the withdrawal latency for an optimistic rollup, you want it to be on the order of 1 to 2 weeks or some long period of real time, which I'm sure we'll cover why shortly in this call. But you want it to be some long period of, you know, human readable time. So it's some period of time that humans can interpret as opposed to just on the order of seconds. So that's the three facets. So very short time to first confirmation, immediately final as soon as it's posted on chain, assuming it's valid. And the withdrawal latency is on the order of 1 to 2 weeks.
Alex, do you think that is a fair assessment of optimistic rollups time to user subjective finality?
I don't think the time to first confirmation does any meaningful difference because you can have the same thing with ZK rollups. And we have to look at the finality from the point of view of users. And I think the broad majority of users would define finality as the point of time where transactions reach the same unreversibility guarantees as though the transaction actually happens on the underlying layer one. And John is right that the transaction cannot be reverted, but from the point of view of layer one, it's not the case. So he refers to this property as withdrawal finality, but it's not just withdrawals, it's any message which is passed from optimistic rollup to layer one. And also from the point of view of light clients, which John previously correctly pointed out as being one of the advantages of ZK rollups. So for light clients, the finality actually, the observable finality equals to the layer one finality, which is going to be this long period of time of 1 or 2 weeks, which most researchers consider to be like minimum security threshold.
John also mentioned a kind of interesting property is the block cannot be reverted assuming it is valid. Is the contrapositive true for optimistic rollups, John? Can an invalid block be accepted?
An invalid block can be accepted if there is no fraud proof posted on chain within 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. And
or whatever your timeout period is.
Alex, is it possible for a ZK rollup contract to accept an invalid block?
It is not possible because every block in ZK rollups requires a corresponding validity proof. So the state transition will simply not happen unless the block producer provides a zero knowledge proof that this block has been valid.
Interesting. So to kind of recap, the finality of a rollup should be measured in the underlying layer one's finalization speed plus for optimistic rollups, this fraud proving period. Because the optimistic rollup can accept an invalid block, you have to wait for that period to see if something will be finalized. Is that pretty reasonable, John?
Not exactly. The reason being is that you can, in fact, distribute fraud proofs in the peer-to-peer network. And distributing fraud proofs in the peer-to-peer network, you can assume much tighter timeouts because you don't have to get consensus on this, really.
Hmm.
So a light client, like a light client of an optimistic rollup, doesn't have to wait whatever timeout on chain before it accepts or rejects a block. It can consider locally a block being valid or invalid much faster by relying on peer-to-peer distributed fraud proofs or lack thereof.
By relying on the existence of some honest node out there? That it happens
yes. It's a light client, so yes. If you want to have secure light clients, then it's either you wait a really long timeout, at which point it's not really a light client. It's more like some super light client or something. Or you have the standard secure light client assumption, which is there's one honest node out there.
And Alex, you're going to say something?
I would strongly disagree because you cannot rely on absence of evidence and take it for the evidence of absence of something. Because you can be eclipsed with your peer-to-peer topology, and you will just not be able to get the fraud proofs from the network, or the network could be segmented and then the fraud proofs will not reach other parts. So you cannot say that because I haven't observed anything in my local peer-to-peer network, that means that there is no fraud proof happening somewhere, or that there is no valid transaction. Because another reason why there could be an invalid transaction and you don't see any fraud proof is because nobody actually observed it. So in optimistic rollups, you rely on one honest participant who monitors the network at all times. But who's actually going to do this? What's the incentive mechanism for people to watch? So my understanding is that the only people who would be incentivized to actually monitor the network and check the proofs would be the validators or block producers of this network who produce the blocks, because they build on the blocks of other block producers. And if should any of the previous blocks be invalid, they would be slashed or they would not get the rewards they were hoping for. So they have incentive for this. But if all of them collude, or if all of them are disabled in other ways, if they have been hacked, if they get some wrong version of software installed, or maybe their DevOps teams get socially engineered and collude, then the fraud generating software will just be disabled and no fraud proofs will be broadcast. So you can, as a light client, you can't really rely on absence of something like until the time passes and you can check what is actually my root state hash on Ethereum.
Well, it seems like that argument could apply directly to the on-chain contracts running the optimistic rollup. Why can the contract rely on absence of evidence in a certain timeout while the light client can't?
For John?
Either person, whoever wants to jump in first.
John, I think it's for you.
Yeah.
Alex is the one who initially made the claim that you can't rely on absence of evidence. But
you
can start.
So the finality in optimistic rollups is most important for communication to light clients. And so essentially what it means when the block is final is that you can access it on layer one. So the state of optimistic rollup is some extension of layer one, as is the case with ZK rollups. It's a layer 1.2 solution where you actually route it on the main chain. So the finality, in fact, as a light client, you can be sure that you can access this money if there were no invalid blocks during this period of time. No one will be able to revert them, even if there were invalid blocks, but your particular account was not affected by them. The time window for posting the fraud proofs is over. So your state, which is now finalized by the passing of the time period, is immutable. And you will be able, by observing further, by assuming that the further operation of optimistic rollup remains correct, you will be able to take this money and exit on layer one sometime in the future. So even if there was a problem, you won't be affected. And this is the meaning of finality here from the point of view of light client.
Okay, interesting. I guess my observation here is that the on-chain contract's subjective timeout, after which it finalizes optimistic rollup blocks, is functionally equivalent to an off-chain light client's subjective timeout. It doesn't seem that there is a technical difference between those two things.
I think one technical difference is that you can actually not submit any fraud proofs for blocks which are earlier than this period.
You can't submit any of them to the contract, but you could still submit them to other peers on the peer-to-peer network.
But they would not be able to do anything with them. So this would be irrelevant information, just some past deeds. Let bygones be bygones.
All right. So moving on from finalization a little bit, because we've spent a lot of time on it so far. What do you think users actually care about with a rollup? What do you think will drive them to use your rollup? And let's start with John this time.
By your rollup, do you mean specifically the rollups that the rollup kind of designs or implementations that we're working on, or optimistic / ZK rollups in general?
I'd like to talk about the specific designs you're working on right now.
Okay. So in terms of what users care most, I would say that I personally have no clue whatsoever. Lots of people say they want certain things and then they don't actually. And then lots of people say they don't want certain things, but really they do. I have no idea what blockchain users want versus what defens want versus what average users that currently using blockchains want is up in the air.
That's very honest.
If any of us knew specifically exactly what people really wanted deep down, then we would probably be very rich and we wouldn't be having this discussion. But in terms of what we see, so I don't know what people really want, but in terms of what we see, it seems to me, at least in the Ethereum space, that there's been an increasing use or acceptance of decentralized finance or open finance protocols that allow you to, do certain financial things in a way that is permissionless in some way, trustless in some other ways, to varying degrees, as a kind of alternative to traditional financial instruments, which I think is particularly interesting. How we get there and how useful this particular DeFi movement will be is, well, I don't know. I guess we'll find out. Now, in terms of what will drive people to the roll-up that I'm in particular working on, which is Fuel from Fuel Labs. So to give a brief one-sentence overview is that we're using a UTXO-based data model that allows for much higher transaction throughput on the same hardware. And we're primarily focused, at least initially, on payments, basic payment applications. And then we are subsequently working on Ethereum-style smart contracts in the next year or two. So why would people want to use our rollup? I think the answer is obvious, at least compared to other optimistic rollups. We offer by far the cheapest and most scalable way of doing value transfer. There is basically not even remotely a comparison between the scalability performance of Fuel versus other optimistic rollups. So in that sense, if people want to transfer value, move money between exchanges, which USDT up until fairly recently was the biggest gas guzzler on Ethereum. Now I think it might be some other DeFi contracts. But if you just want to move money between exchanges, if you want to buy goods and services and so on, you just want to move value around, maybe with some basic conditions, Fuel is basically unmatched in terms of other optimistic rollups. That's it.
And Alex, same question. What do you think users care about and what will drive them to use ZK Sync?
I think that the users in Ethereum simply want to scale. So we are solving a problem. And the problem is that the gas prices are high and the throughput of blocks is limited. And we are expecting much broader adoption of this blockchain technologies and much more users. So what people are hoping for is to be able to just do whatever they do on the mainnet at much lower cost and much higher throughput. They want to do it without giving up any of the properties which make the mainnet Ethereum valuable for them. So that means not giving up usability and, most importantly, not giving up security. And this is where ZK rollup absolutely shines. Because, and by the way, why the statement is important, people actually would prefer ZK rollup over other solutions. We see that there are other solutions that offer inferior security properties or inferior usability, such as sidechains, and they're not getting a lot of adoption. So everyone is still waiting, and people would rather keep their contracts and protocols and users on the mainnet and pay high fees than to move billions of dollars onto sidechains. So security really is important. And the cool thing about ZK rollup is that, cryptographic assumptions aside, you can get exactly the same security guarantees as layer one. So I call it passive security, passive with regard to the ZK rollup protocol itself. So no one needs to do any work to keep the system secure. You can put money there, disappear for a year. Meanwhile, you don't care whether there were any validators, other users, any usage at all. You come back and you can be sure that you will get your assets back no matter what. And this is unique. Any other scaling solution requires some additional work from some additional actors, which has actively to be performed to keep the system secure. And these security properties still have limitations. And normally they limit the guarantees severely compared to mainnet. For example, in the case of optimistic rollups, you cannot really, with 1 week delay, you cannot put more than around $50 million in a single optimistic rollup instance, because you have some specific attack vectors connected to 51% hash rate attacks on the mainnet, which can just steal all the money from a rollup, and the cost of this attack is lower than some dozens of millions of dollars. And the practical cost is actually very low, almost negligible. ZK rollup, you can put billions, and it's going to be just as secure as layer one. Of course, you can make still some bugs in the contracts or bugs in your zero-knowledge circuits or implementations of cryptography. But this is something which is, first of all, it affects all protocols. And second of all, it's going to be subject to very strict review and audits and proving. So it's very different from this ongoing game theoretical incentivized.
So I want to dig into that a little more. You said that even if there are no validators on the rollup while you're offline, it will still be secure when you get back. In that case, what does the validator do? What's the function? Who runs it? Is it decentralized?
To produce blocks. So validators and block producers are synonyms here. Mm-hmm. So you need someone to perform work to keep the rollup active, live, to produce new blocks and to actually scale operations. But if the block producers disappear, you cannot progress. So you cannot have these cheap transactions going on forward, but you can always get your money back.
Okay. When you say block production, presumably you mean also creating the proof for that block. How much does it cost to create that proof? How much does it cost to run the validator right now?
So the costs of the proofs amortized per transaction is actually negligible compared to the costs of the on-chain gas part of rollup transactions. So for a simple transfer, for example, right now we're paying something like 0.01 cent per transfer proof generation cost. And we're using common cloud services like AWS or Google Cloud Platform. And the way it works this efficiently is that we only need these cloud instances to produce a block. So once we have a block, we can spin off new instance, let it produce the proof, and then we shut it down. So it all happens on demand. And This can be done by anyone, by any validator, in any cloud.
Interesting. Jumping back a little bit, John, you said that Fuel is running on UTXOs, and Alex, ZK Sync is only payment so far as I'm aware. It seems neither of these systems are handling smart contracts right now. And some of the underlying models here, UTXOs and validity proofs, make it difficult to have arbitrary computations with state, right? It makes it difficult to make the kinds of complex DeFi apps used on Ethereum today. John, first, do you think that's a fair assessment? And does Fuel intend to support these things in the future?
I would say that's a fair assessment of Fuel, that we don't currently support anything that you would call a smart contract, unless you call an HTLC a smart contract. But in the future, we are planning on supporting both Bitcoin-style predicates and fully featured Ethereum-style smart contracts with rich state that carries over between transactions. And I wrote a post about how this can be done in the UTXO data model that you can find on talk.lazyledger.org, I believe. There's a post that I wrote up on how this can be done in the UTXO data model, and that's the architecture that we're planning on using for Fuel within the next couple of years.
Would you say this is one of the major things missing from Fuel right now? I've noticed that Fuel is not on mainnet yet. Is this one of the things blocking it?
Well, you asked two conflicting questions. To your first question on do I think this is missing from Fuel, the answer is yes and no, in terms of I think this is missing from a kind of final version of what I would want to see in terms of an optimistic rollup and in terms of Fuel. But is it missing from the current version of Fuel? The answer is no. The current version of Fuel is actually undergoing some final security audits, so it should be on mainnet before end of year.
Oh, that's great. As a kind of general question, do you think it feels like optimistic solutions have, in general, lagged ZK solutions in deployment? Do you think there's a reason for that, or is it just coincidence or timing issues?
I would say that there is, well, coincidence and timing issues are reasons. But is there a reason for that? The answer, has to be yes. There has to be a reason for why it seems that ZK Sync is on mainnet. Loopring's, whatever they call it, Loopring, I guess, is also on mainnet. And I think other ZK rollups are, approaching, and ZK rollups have been developed at a pretty astounding pace. So you might think, why is it that people have built these systems with all this advanced cryptography? People haven't built these systems without advanced cryptography, where these systems is optimistic rollups. Why haven't these been launched yet? Why are they still under active development? Why do they seem to not have so many features at this moment? I think the reason being, and I might be a bit biased here, I might not be seeing the whole picture, but at least from where I stand and from what I've seen, I think a lot of the early thoughts around ZK rollups, after they were introduced by Barry Whitehat, and then Vitalik Buterin extended them a bit, a lot of the early thought around that were that A, ZK rollups work because of the zero knowledge proofs, and B, the zero knowledge proofs were a form of compression. And I think both of these things are, the first statement is obviously wrong, and the second thing, it depends how you define compression, but I wouldn't call this compression, and in fact is a big pet peeve of mine when anyone calls a rollup or a validity proof a compression, because you can't uncompress it. It's like a one-way function. It's like calling a hash function a compression, which you can't uncompress a hash function, really. So there was a lot of the way people were thinking about ZK rollups when they were first introduced was that it worked because of the zero knowledge proof. And if you search for the word fraud inside Vitalik Buterin's post on ETH Research, his now famous 500 transactions per second, whatever, post, which extended the ZK rollup that was introduced by Barry Whitehat, that one there, if you search for the word fraud in that post, you'll find zero instances of it. So no one was thinking about fraud proofs at the time, because people thought that it worked because of the zero knowledge proof and not rollups can work. You just replace the zero knowledge proof with a fraud proof plus a timeout. And maybe the properties change and stuff, but no one thought this was even possible. Like, no one even thought of it until I came along. So because of this initial thought that you had to use zero knowledge proofs, well, no one developed optimistic rollups because everyone just thought that this is the only way to do it. After I published my post on optimistic rollups, or describing the technique that is now known as optimistic rollups, then various teams caught on and so on, and people started building it out. But it took a while for that mentality to shift, essentially. It was just a mentality shift. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think it definitely does. It's really interesting to me, in light of our earlier conversation about optimistic rollups keeping people optimistic about scaling solutions for the last year, is that we essentially said that the solution invented second and deployed second is what got people excited about the original solution.
Yeah, I think that's it's an interesting way things happened. And I'm sure that when people write history books about this, if they ever do, God forbid, then it'll be an interesting story.
Those poor historians. So jumping back to the original question that got us off on this tangent, Alex, my understanding is that ZK Sync today does not have support for smart contracts, and that smart contracts are driving the majority of usage of Ethereum right now. I believe that you have plans for adding those. Are those coming in V2, and how do you intend to achieve that in the validity proof model?
So they're coming in V2, and we actually have smart contracts already live on testnet. We had a test integration of Curve on ZK Sync, which anybody can go and check out. We have the code for it public. You can check the contracts written in Sync. And our plan is actually now going much further. So the reason we don't have smart contracts in production yet, because there was a big blocker which did not allow us to implement contracts earlier, and that was recursion. You needed recursive composition of zero knowledge proofs, because that is one of the ways you can do heterogeneous computation, blocks not of only of similar transactions such as transfers, which just repeat number of times, but that you can mix up different transactions of different weight with different heavy operations, different number of storage reads and writes, and so on. The way to do this would be to build something like universal circuits, which just blow up the number of constraints and make the computation very expensive. And this is why people assumed for a long time that building smart contracts on ZK rollups would be infeasible. But recursion changes all of this. This is a complete game changer. And we just implemented it this summer. We used it for the Reddit demo because recursion also gives us a significant boost of the compression of computation. Now we're going to use it for building actually fully compatible Solidity smart contracts. So you will be able to take any existing contract from Ethereum in Solidity and probably also in Viper and just port it on ZK Sync, use it there with minimum or no modifications. Just to come back to the John's point that ZK rollups not offer compression because you cannot uncompress a hash, this is actually not entirely true because you can uncompress a root hash. If you have a Merkle tree, you can always show that you have some balance and you just unpack the Merkle root to the Merkle path to the root. This way you compress the hash. And this is exactly what's being done with the solutions. We store the root hash on a contract on Ethereum, and we have this complex validity proofs that show that it actually corresponds to a valid state off-chain, and then any user who knows their account data can prove their ownership and take the money back to the mainnet.
So you said that the contracts will be, you know, written in Solidity and will run directly on ZK Sync.
Yeah.
But this is, to my understanding, not going to be using EVM bytecode running on ZK Sync. Is that correct?
Yes, this is correct. You don't need EVM bytecodes. What you need is that your source codes correspond to you take the logic from the source code and this logic is enforced. So you don't have to have exactly the same bytecodes because optimistic rollups also don't do this. So as from what I know about Optimism solution, for example, or Arbitrum, they have their own virtual machines where they transcompile the bytecodes into something different, which is easier to process on Ethereum. So it's not exactly one-to-one bytecodes. But you take your existing code, you can read the code, you can audit it, you know exactly what it's doing. You have all your types, and then you have some logic encoded in Solidity with some constraints, with all the logic you have, storage access and so on. And this logic will be executed just the way you have it in Solidity, following all the rules.
Help me build some intuition about this. Will each of these contracts require a new circuit?
The contracts will require a new proof. So this is a little bit of a magic which is going into the version which we're building. So I would not go into much detail how exactly we do this. But essentially, every contract execution will be verified recursively. Yes.
So each contract execution results in a new proof. All of those proofs are put under the single validity proof that is posted on chain. Is that correct?
This is correct. And moreover, we will have all the properties from Solidity, including the composability. So you will be able to call other contracts and they will return values and they can call other contracts in turn. You can have recursion. Everything will work.
Interesting. How does this compare to Zexi, for example?
Zexi is focused on privacy, and that's why they're using very different architectural approach based on predicates. To port your contracts to Zexi would require you to re-engineer them entirely to fit into this architecture. And our decision was from the beginning to make it as close to the Ethereum architecture as possible. For example, all accounts in ZK Sync have the standard Ethereum addresses. So you can actually send tokens now in ZK Sync, which is in production, to any Ethereum address, even to smart contracts, and it will work. It will just create a new account in ZK Sync with this address, and then the recipient can always get this money to layer one, even if they cannot register, they cannot pass a message to ZK Sync. So this is just one example. We try to design ZK Sync completely very close to Ethereum, following the same account model, following the same computational model, making signing simple. And the same thing will continue with Solidity. With Solidity, our plan is to have one-to-one portability of all the existing code with just very few exceptions. So you probably won't be able to execute very complex cryptography, do some pairing proofs inside ZK Sync. But for that, you will be able to have specialized circuits and specialized contracts, which will replace the Ethereum precompiles, which we cannot natively support contracts.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like we've gotten pretty deep into the weeds on ZK Sync, and I want to pull back out to a little bit of a higher level question for both of you. And I'm going to start with John again. John, what failure cases for optimistic rollup and Fuel in particular are you worried about?
Failure cases in terms of...
Well, what can go wrong and what happens to users when things go wrong?
Okay, so what can go wrong is in an optimistic rollup, if a fraud proof isn't generated within the timeout period, then users can lose funds. Users can have their funds stolen. That's one thing that can go wrong. Another thing that can go wrong is there could be a smart contract bug. And if there's a smart contract bug, this could either prevent a fraud proof from being able to be generated, or it could allow a fraud proof to be generated when it shouldn't be. And this could either allow theft of user funds, or it could potentially lock up the chain forever. The latter case being the least likely, because it's a little bit tricky to have fraud proof that can be generated all the time to make every block fraudulent. It's pretty tough, I think, to get into that situation. So those are the worst case failure modes. The one thing that we've explicitly tried to avoid is user funds being locked simply due to lack of computational resources. One unfortunate thing that people have advertised optimistic rollups as being able to do, in addition to weird stuff like faster confirmation times, one thing is they've advertised optimistic rollups as being able to process more than 15 transactions per second if they run the EVM as their execution system on the same hardware or omitting the hardware requirements to do this. You've probably seen numbers out there on the order of 500 or 1,000 or even 10,000 and some ridiculous numbers like this in implied in a single EVM optimistic rollups with no kind of consideration of the hardware requirements that you would need to do this. A single system with a global state processing 10,000 transactions per second would require a very powerful computer to handle this. So there's kind of one failure mode that we've tried very hard to explicitly avoid a Fuel, and we've made various compromises to achieve this, but it means that you can process many more transactions per second than you can on Ethereum on Fuel. And unfortunately, this does mean that the system had to be essentially engineered from scratch in a way that allows transaction execution with less work per transaction. So this is achieved both by adding parallelism to a transaction verification and having a better state access model. And because of this, it means that the Fuel chain or new users of Fuel don't have to be worried about not being able to eventually being able to withdraw their funds because they can't possibly catch up to the chain because it's processing so many transactions. They don't have to worry about this failure case. So in terms of the other failure cases, you know, what happens if someone creates an invalid block and fraud proof isn't posted? I'm not really worried about that. The reason being is that in protocol, there's one actor, as Alex pointed out earlier, there's one actor in protocol that has an incentive to validate blocks fully, and that's the block proposers. But extra protocol, there's actually a few other actors that I believe will more than make up for the lack of in-protocol actors, and that's users that want to be able to accept blocks as valid quickly without having to rely on anyone else, which is, again, we talked about finality and stuff and withdrawal latency and whatnot earlier, but essentially it means that if they want to be able to accept an optimistic rollup as block as valid, for example, if it's an exchange accepting a Fuel block, the Fuel deposits from Fuel directly, they would probably run a full node for Fuel because they don't want to wait 2 weeks. They want to accept it immediately, and they have all the incentive in the world to run a full node. The other class of actors that I expect to run full nodes and that have a financial incentive to do so, even if it's not in protocol, is liquidity providers for fast withdrawals. So optimistic rollups natively have a two-week, let's say, some parameter there, withdrawal latency, but you don't have to wait those 2 weeks. You can actually alleviate that by trading or exchanging time for money. You can actually use cross-chain atomic swaps, in this case between the rollup and, say, Ethereum, using things like HTLCs to immediately withdraw funds within a few minutes from the rollup to back to layer one by just having liquidity provider negotiate an atomic swap. And further, you can actually further trade off or exchange liquidity for UX, which is probably the best case scenario, because now you went from initially a time problem, which is non-fungible, to a money problem, which is at least fungible, now to a UX problem. This is for fungible assets, of course. As I said earlier, ZK rollups are unmatched when it comes to non-fungible assets or non-liquid in general. So the last thing you can do is, well, you note that people who are going to deposit into the rollup in general, they could be used essentially as liquidity providers. So you don't need a dedicated liquidity provider. You can actually have people that are going to deposit anyways. So now you end up with a UX problem, which is fairly easy to solve. You just put some engineers and some designers behind it, match up people doing withdrawals and deposits, and now you basically end up with a situation where anyone can withdraw their liquid funds within minutes at almost no cost. So I'm not really worried about that failure mode there of not having enough incentivized actors running full nodes and being able to create a fraud proof. Hmm. To answer your question in like 10 seconds, is the two biggest failure modes I'm concerned about is one, a smart contract bug, which is again why we're undergoing a final security audit and why we've taken so long to get to mainnet and why we're not there yet is because we want to be very safe. We are not planning any upgrade mechanism for Fuel V1 or possibly ever, which means that if there's a smart contract bug, then unfortunately things go bad, but it means that we are fully decentralized, unlike a lot of protocols out there. The other thing I'm worried about, which I'll be short, is if there are simply no one using the system whatsoever. I said there's a bunch of people that are incentivized to run full nodes, but that's assuming that people are actually using the system. One particularly scary failure mode is what happens if there's straight up just no one using the system. And I don't really know what will happen in the future. Hopefully we don't end up in that failure mode.
So really quick, you talked a lot about full nodes, about light clients, about how expensive it may be to run a full node on one of these rollups, and about user funds being locked. I know the thing that you are dancing around, but can you state it outright for the people listening? What happens to users' funds that locks them?
Sure. One of the whole reasons that rollups put all the data on chain is that in the worst case, everyone, all the block proposers, they just disappear. And then you, the user, needs to be able to produce a new block in some way. It could be producing a new block. It could be putting a single state transition, but you need to produce a new block in some way. And generally, to produce a new block, you need to know what your coins are. You need to know proof for your coins. And this is especially relevant in the accounts data model. It's actually not so relevant in the UTXO data model, ironically, but in the accounts data model, it's very important. And let's consider the case of a ZK rollup, so we don't have to bother with the complexity of the optimistic rollups. In order to produce a new ZK rollup block, you need to make a proof that, like a Merkle, like you need to make a ZK proof that, as a witness, a Merkle branch to your account. It's a leaf in the account, the whole state tree. And you need to provide that as a witness that's a private input into the proof. So if you don't have an up-to-date Merkle proof of your account against the latest state of the ZK rollup, you can't spend those funds. What this means is, in the worst case, if all the block proposers disappear, you must fully execute and fully apply every single state transition from the genesis of the rollup chain to get the entire final state, which you can then use to produce a new block. And in my opinion, which appears isn't shared by everyone in the Ethereum community, you need to metric systems based on their worst case performance and not on their average or their best case for performance.
So the summary there is that users of a rollup need to either run a full node or trust that someone else out there will give them that state proof on demand. Is that fair?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Getting back to Alex, do you think that is a fair assessment of the exit strategy for a failed ZK rollup? What other failure cases are you worried about? And how do you address them?
So first, to address this particular case, it's not correct to say that you need to run a full node. You just need access to an Ethereum archive node. So what you need to do is to be able to sync Ethereum full history of Ethereum blocks, which contain the state transitions. And then you apply the the state transitions to your state and recompute the hash. And the application of the state transitions actually takes less time that you need to download the full Ethereum archive. So by the time you download, you sync your full Ethereum node, you already reconstructed the state and you can immediately use it. And you only do it in rare cases. And I think as long as Ethereum itself relies on full archives and full nodes for holding the previous state, it's safe to assume that this is a good way to exit. So you don't rely on anyone else to do it for you.
To check my understanding here, right, is when I want to exit this ZK rollup, I need to know what the current root hash is. So I need to have an Ethereum client of some kind so I can know what it is on layer one. Mm-hmm. And then I need to have the current leaf, my leaf in the state tree that connects to that root hash. So I need to have some sort of access to the rollup state. Yes. So in each of those two cases, I need to either be running it myself or I need to be talking to some trusted or very low trust third party to get that, right?
To trustless third party, because you will verify that they gave you the correct information by just matching the Merkle paths. But you can just reconstruct it from the Ethereum logs.
Right. As long as I have an Ethereum node.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But for you to download and execute all, like sync the full Ethereum node with turbo gas, I think it took something like 1 week. And then if users are affected in some rollup, I imagine that someone will do this and then just share a torrent file with the latest state, which is going to be small. So we can exactly say, like, if we have 1 billion accounts in a ZK rollup, then the full state with the hashes of other users will be something like just a couple of gigabytes. So it's 40 gigabytes. So it's not that much.
Yeah.
It's like a good series.
So it's this like small additional assumptions you make when you access Ethereum, right? Is you need the Ethereum state somehow and you need the ZK rollup state somehow. It's usually not very difficult to get those things. I think a lot of us use MetaMask in the browser and do that automatically anyway. But it is like an additional little wrinkle in the user's security assumptions.
I would say it's not an additional assumption. It's the assumption of safety of ZK rollup is that Ethereum is safe. So the assumption is that your funds are going to be as safe as though they are in Ethereum. Now, mm-hmm. if you just operate a light client in Ethereum, you might be declined access to the latest state of your Ethereum funds, and then you won't be able to do anything. In order for you to be able to access Ethereum, you rely on someone to operate full nodes, and you rely on the state being publicly available. So it's
right.
the assumption itself.
Okay, sorry to interrupt. Please continue. What other failure cases are you worried about, and how do you address those?
As I said before, in ZK rollups, you can only fail if you implement your contracts in the wrong way and you have bugs and someone exploits those bugs, or if you have bugs in your zero-knowledge circuits or in cryptography, which is essentially the same thing. So if you have bugs in your protocol, so this is, of course, a real possibility. So you have to spend a lot of effort on the design, testing, audits. Simplicity in design is especially important, making code readable, making it logically structured, all the best practices you follow in security of any other protocol.
Are you at all worried about like validators disappearing? What happens to users if nobody is posting new blocks?
So then the users in the current version of ZK-Sync, in ZK-Sync 1.0, you would have to do the full exit where you get the rollup state off-chain from the logs, then you construct your Merkle proof for your account and you go on-chain and make a withdrawal, which might be comparable to mass exit problem, except that you don't have any deadlines. You can do it anytime, but you still need to make one transaction on layer one, which is unpleasant. If you have a lot of users, millions of users, then we actually want to avoid that. Most users will create their accounts and live entirely in layer two. So we want to avoid a situation where all of them have to withdraw to layer one. That's why we're planning for ZK-Sync version 2 mass migration mechanism. where you will be able to have this enforced exits en masse with other users to some to alternative version of a rollup, should something happens to the validators of this one, and should it be unrecoverable for some reason.
Okay, interesting. So I guess John's position here is that ZK rollups require an assumption that there's an honest node willing to give you the state of the chain. And audience member Nick White asks, if that same node could as easily produce a fraud proof, why do we prefer ZK proofs? Why do we prefer validity proofs?
The fact that you can produce a fraud proof doesn't mean that you will produce fraud proof. And it doesn't mean that your fraud proof is going to be included. We're just back to the discussion about security of the rollups. But there is no assumption in ZK rollup that someone will give you the state. You can always go and get the state from Ethereum. That's why it's called a rollup and not a validium. In a validium, which he probably refers to, indeed, the state is held off-chain. So it's validium is something which can be understood as a ZK plasma. So your state is completely off-chain. You don't share it through Ethereum network. Full nodes in Ethereum do not have a imprint of it. And then, yes, you rely on someone to give you this data. And if they don't give you this data, then your funds will be frozen. But that's not ZK rollup. That's validium.
For context, are there any validiums running on-chain today? Any names that people would recognize?
Sure. I think Diversify runs it with Starkware. And this is a validium system.
Oh, so that would be the StarkDex system.
The StarkX, yes. I think the newer version of StarkX supports ZK rollup mode as well. But I think the current deployment was in Validium. Mm-hmm. I might be wrong, but I think that's the case.
And would you say the substantive difference there is where the data is made available?
Whether the data is made available through Ethereum cold data. So whether the data is broadcast through the Ethereum network as a part of Ethereum blocks.
Okay. Is there so if validiums correspond to ZK rollups, loosely speaking, they use validity proofs on some set of data, but the data is published in different places. Is there a system that corresponds to optimistic rollups in the same way?
Yes, it's Plasma.
Ah, okay. Interesting.
So there's a comment from LastMJS. So he says, it's not really a debate as far as I've observed. I'm pretty sure most people agree that ZK is the end goal and optimistic rollups are a good short, medium-term solution. What are you guys' thoughts on that? Maybe starting with Alex?
I definitely agree with the statement, but as I said earlier in the conversation, I'm afraid that optimistic rollups will be launched already as an obsolete solution because ZK rollups have a number of advantages which we discussed. Most importantly, security, but also this usability and capital efficient exits. Because if you have to use external liquidity providers, it's quite expensive and you probably can't do it to move large fractions of your rollup. So a lot of users will want to move their liquidity to a different system because they get better yields there or whatnot. They won't be able to do it. But there is one overseen issue as well. Right now, ZK rollups are already cheaper and they will always remain cheaper than optimistic rollups because the most expensive part of transactions in both systems is the on-chain data gas cost. ZK rollups just generally, for most transactions, need to put less data on-chain. So, for example, if you want to maintain Ethereum compatibility with the same signature format, same signature scheme, and you don't want to have this TruBit style fraud proofs in multiple steps, then you actually need to put a lot of data for each transaction. 65 bytes for Ethereum signature plus one intermediate hash for the state after this transaction, plus the inputs, the full input of the transaction. Whereas in a ZK rollup system, you omit the signature entirely. Even if you use Ethereum compatible ECDSA, you can just omit it entirely. You omit the intermediate hash, and you can also omit a lot of inputs in various contracts. So essentially, you omit all the inputs. You only publish the outputs and whatever changes in the storage, which is going to be a lot less, and it's already a lot less in case of payments. And we will also be able to support smart contracts with Solidity very soon, so potentially earlier or soon after Optimistic Rollups launch with this solution. So I just really don't see any benefits of Optimistic Rollups. Yeah.
John, Alex used some pretty strong language there. He said obsolete, no benefits. How would you respond to that?
Sure. I would say that, first of all, in terms of ZK rollups being always cheaper, I would say that's both true and not true, in the sense that ZK rollups can be cheaper since you can emit witness data, but it's not necessarily always true. If you have a system that just handles simple payments, for example, and you accept an interactive verification game, because there's nothing inherently wrong, the guys at Offchain Labs have built that Arbitrum, which currently today is the first EVM compatible rollup, not just optimistic, but rollup that is currently out in testnet. And you know, if you want to build out Solidity contracts and stuff and do it in a rollup, you don't have to wait for the other chains. You can just use theirs right now. So they have a system that works perfectly fine with an interactive verification game. And if you're willing to accept that, you don't need intermediate state routes. And you can compress witness data with a BLS signature. So in this one instance, so it's not always the case that ZK rollups are cheaper. In this one instance, you can construct an optimistic rollup that just handles payments, and it will be cheaper than a ZK rollup because the compressed BLS signature will be both smaller. It'll be cheaper in general just to post it on chain than it would be to both post and verify the zero knowledge proof of the same state transitions in the ZK rollup. Where I think ZK rollups are particularly exciting is where they can verify or even prove a large amount of computation that results in a small amount of state transitions. So in terms of whether or not optimistic rollups are obsolete from the outset versus ZK rollups, I would say not necessarily, because we can't necessarily put cryptographic assumptions aside. We've seen many cases of cryptography being broken, and the fewer cryptographic assumptions we make, the better. This is not a small assumption that you can just put aside. There have been many suggestions for things like Stark or potentially Snark-friendly hash functions, and I've seen a few being proposed throughout the years. And then every few months, and they say, oh, wait, actually the one we proposed 3 months ago is actually broken with this attack. Here's a new one. We promise this one has no attack vector. And this has happened several times throughout the past few years. Even something as simple as a hash function is difficult to get. Building out an entire system with this novel cryptography is actually a strong assumption, and this could take a while. So in terms of whether or not this is the end goal or not, as that Twitter user said, I would actually agree with him. I would agree with him and say ZK rollups are the, not just ZK rollups, but validity proofs are the end goal. The problem is, what does short to medium term mean? And I think some people read that and say short to medium term means 6 months, that optimistic rollups will be obsolete in 6 months. But what if that's 20 years, right? If it's 20 years, then that is, in the grand scheme of things, a short period of time. You know, if we have fully functional zero knowledge proofs that can do all this amazing stuff 20 years from now, that's actually going to be an amazing accomplishment. And it will be a short amount of time, but that's not today.
So is your argument there that it is significantly easier to get the semantics of a fraud proof correct than to get the semantics of a zero knowledge proof correct?
Considering everything, yes. By everything, it's not just writing some circuit, but it's also all the cryptographic assumptions and the proofs and math and stuff behind the cryptography. And yes, considering everything, yes, I would say it's much easier to get fraud proofs correct than validity proofs.
You mentioned Snark-friendly hash functions specifically. Are there any other cryptographic primitives that you are worried about?
I'm not 100% sure on what the latest and greatest in what people suggest to use for ZK proofs, but the recursive snarks, whatever construction is used for recursive snarks, I believe that's novel. There's also some novel cryptography in that we don't want to have a trusted setup for snarks. So I think there's no trusted setup or universal trusted setup snarks. There's some novel cryptography there. There's also, I think there has been use of different signature schemes. I don't remember which one, but I want to say EDDSA. And I've been told that EDDSA is substantially better than ECDSA because ECDSA is garbage. Of course, if you looked at a fairly recent Twitter thread, it turned out that EDDSA has malleable signatures, or like the way you verify signatures is malleable. And basically, there's not a single implementation out there that actually conforms to the standard proposed by an RFC, which means that if any blockchain or any system that uses EDDSA, if they have two clients written in different languages, this could result in consensus failure. Mm-hmm. So basically, this shows that any blockchain that has used EDDSA, they should not have done that. They jumped the gun because they heard, oh, it has these nice properties, these amazing properties, it's so much better than ECDSA. It turns out that was a terrible idea. And they only learned this later. The various blockchains use EDDSA. They've been using it for a couple of years. None of them should have used it because the verification is malleable.
I'm aware of blockchains that have been using EDDSA for at least 5 years. But ZK-Sync, as far as I know, does not use EDDSA. Your argument there, I think, is more general, that cryptography needs to be thoroughly vetted over many years.
Yes.
Do you have a lower threshold? What's the minimum amount of vetting time for you, John?
I would say decades, on the order of decades.
You're not a fan of Ketchak?
No, I hate Ketchak. SHA-3 is, they're all terrible. They're all terrible. But no, I'm not a fan of any of the new hash functions. It's like one of those things, if you put a gun to my head and told me to decide which hash function would you use if you could only use one of them, maybe I would pick SHA-3 because it's standard, but they're all terrible.
I don't think anyone has ever threatened me to make me choose between cryptographic primitives. I want to give Alex a chance to talk about this a little more. Alex, what new primitives are you guys using? What new constructions? And do you have reason to believe that they're safe to use?
Absolutely. So as these newer cryptographic primitives were mentioned, which are used by Ethereum already, it's clear that it's not about some abstract considerations, but you cannot be better than the base system you rely on. And Ethereum is going to use BLS signatures in ETH2 very soon. Plonk actually uses cryptographic assumptions, which are very similar to the BLS signatures we use. Our cryptography team would be better able to talk about this than me. But the cryptographic assumptions are definitely a concern. So we only use things which have been known for a while and that have been thoroughly audited. And we do not use any esoteric assumptions such as knowledge of exponent. So we rely on the very conservative cryptographic assumption itself. Now, whenever someone says that some primitive is broken, what this means in practice is that there is a theoretic way to exploit. You can have some bias in the hash function, so it's not going to be entirely random, or that under some circumstances you can increase the brute force attack efficiency on this cryptographic primitive. But that means that you will be able to break things that are at much lower security margins than those used in actual production systems. So by the moment academic community and cryptographic community discovers some vulnerability, you still have plenty of time to replace these primitives with something better. Because from the time of discovery of potential vulnerabilities to the time of actual attacks, that actually takes years to be able to exploit them. So I would not be worried about that. I would be worried generally about any complex systems, including ZK and optimistic rollups, where people just put smart contracts on Ethereum, plain smart contracts without proper audit, or even with audit, when people go and rush to deploy large amounts of funds into very new systems. I would rather take a gradual approach and let the systems grow naturally over time with capital being exposed to the world, to potential attackers, and see that nothing happens for a while. Then you can be sure that the systems work. So I think this is true for ETH2, for proof of stake, for sharding, as well as for both families of the rollups. And yeah, of course, you have some hard limits, which when you hit them, that you're in trouble, like this, the maximum amount of funds which you can securely place in an optimistic rollup. But apart from that, all systems undergo this same adoption curve, I'd say.
So would you say that there is not significantly more risk from new cryptography than you get anyway in the solidity implementation of your contracts and system?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So the cryptography we're using is very well understood. So we're going through audits and we're talking to people, and there is a growing body of cryptographers who understand these protocols very well. And they are built of atomic blocks, and then these blocks are being reused in composable ways. So you have your basic assumptions, which have been validated in other production systems for years, and then they are being applied here. And I'm absolutely not worried about this particular part as being something of an extra threat. I would be more worried about just making mistakes in implementation.
Interesting. So you are more worried about the Solidity implementation and about the validators like uptime and reliability than you are about the cryptography involved.
Yeah, so any complex system, the more complex the system, the more risk you have that it will have some problems. So this applies to ZK, to validity proofs, and this applies to fraud proofs equally. So the degrees of complexity might vary. So you might need longer time to get convinced that one or another solution works well.
If I can interject, I would also be more confident in novel cryptography versus a Solidity implementation. And it's not because the novel cryptography is sound.
I have done a significant amount of work in Solidity and as a security consultant and auditor for Solidity contracts. I think everyone on this call would agree that the absence of evidence of a Solidity bug is not evidence of absence of a Solidity bug.
So that's one reason why we're really excited that the Solidity part of a ZK rollup is really minimal. It's really small.
Okay. So we're running close to time here. I'd like to ask one more question from both of you to wind things down and focus on the future of these systems. So Vitalik recently began to advocate a rollup-centric Ethereum roadmap. For each of you, and let's go with John first, what does this mean for ETH2? Is he referring to a particular rollup? And how do you see your system in the context of the future of Ethereum?
Yeah, so to give some very brief background is Vitalik Buterin recently proposed a shift in the Serenity roadmap. Instead of rushing towards sharded execution, which could, if you use up all the resources of all the nodes in Serenity, you would get somewhere around 1,000 transactions per second. Versus if you get to phase one, where you have sharded data availability only, but no sharded execution, you can get, by maxing out the resources of the nodes, you can get somewhere around the data availability throughput of 10,000 transactions per second. You're not executing those transactions, but you have that much data availability throughput. And that's because data availability is cheaper than execution. And the interesting thing about this is actually that if you have data availability and ordering, you can build anything as an execution layer on top of this. You don't actually need execution at the base layer. So in this context, if you have a system with only data availability and ordering, and that's all it does at the consensus layer, it can support a huge amount of data availability throughput for not just itself, but potentially all the rollups that are running in Ethereum. And imagine if you extend it further, you can have it all zones in Cosmos, all the shards in Near, all the blocks in Solana, just everything running together on a single shared data availability layer. This means everything can share security. So you essentially get all the nice properties of sharding, shared security, without the downsides of base layer sharded execution. Such a system is being built out. It's called Lazy Ledger. I'm a co-founder of it, in case it wasn't obvious. So I envision that as the future of blockchain scaling. And again, it can be used as a data availability layer for all rollups. So in terms of how does this fit into the roadmap of Ethereum and rollups and so on, I think there is, right now, Ethereum is very limited in its data availability throughput, because in Ethereum today, you need every transaction to be fully validated by all Ethereum nodes, including all the call data, including all the data that's made available for rollups. So there's an inherent limit in this world computer model. You know, every single state update needs to be processed by every node. But if you have this huge amount of data availability throughput, 10,000, 20,000, 100,000 transactions per second, there's no fighting anymore among rollups. Why would they fight? They have so much space. Right? There's nothing to fight over. Let them do whatever they want and let the best one come out. Right now on Ethereum today, they do have to fight because spaces are limited. But in the future, with systems like Lazy Ledger, there's no problem with fighting. So if there's no fighting, let's just let everyone do what they want to do. So in that sense, I envision in the near future, we're going to see not just one optimistic rollup or 10 optimistic rollups or one ZK rollup, but I expect to see all of these systems running in parallel on a future version of Ethereum.
In a post-blockchain scarcity society.
Mm. Yes.
Alex, same question. Vitalik's been talking about the rollup-centric roadmap. What does this mean for ETH2, and what does it mean for ZK Sync and ZK rollups in Ethereum's future?
I agree to what John said, and this is definitely how things will look like. You will have this post rollup abundance of resources. You will be able to do a lot of things, and I'm particularly excited about Lazy Ledger. I think this is one of the coolest developments we have after rollups, because it will decrease the load of individual full nodes. And this is of paramount importance. So one of the reasons why I got into rollups in the beginning was that I feel that it's very important to keep this decentralization property of the public blockchains. So your main purpose of the layer one is to be resilient to like very powerful attackers. And the way to be resilient is to be broadly decentralized. Ethereum used to have something like 25,000 nodes back in 2017. Now it's down to 7,000 nodes. And the trend is unfortunate. It's going down because the resources required to run a full node exceed what an average person can do with a ordinary consumer laptop. You don't want like to spam all your space with Ethereum data. So Lazy Ledger, erasure coding solves this. And this is absolutely fantastic. In general, what I think about rollups on ETH2, I think that the roadmap Vitalik was excellent and actually the only viable way forward. And it really doesn't make sense to do anything otherwise, because rollups will give you this sharding capacities today. What I think, what I'm going to speculate what's going to happen in ETH2 world, I think that we will have a lot of rollups compete. We'll have a lot of optimistic rollups compete, especially because they are easier to build. You don't need the special zero knowledge proof expertise and a lot of math. So more people will try to experiment and build their versions. But eventually, because of composability, because of the need of composability, specifically in DeFi and in various other systems, you will end up with a few rollups being this massive big platforms where things happen. And I think that's rather going to be ZK rollups, because optimistic rollups have this negative network effects, which I mentioned a couple of times earlier. So you cannot really have this one super platform, one optimistic rollups, which like has all the activity from DeFi. But you can have it with ZK rollups. And that's why I would expect this winner takes most dynamics with regard to ZK rollups. And yeah, just having a few platforms following the power law of distribution of liquidity and activity there. That's my speculation.
Interesting. Thank you. Do either of you have any last thoughts you'd like to leave us with? Alex first.
I think we discussed most of the things. I just want to say thank you to the listeners and thank you to John. Thank you, James. It was a really interesting discussion.
John, any last words?
Not especially. I think we covered everything that we really needed to cover, or at least the critical parts. So thanks, Alex. Thanks, James. Thanks, Richard. And to the rest of the listeners.
Okay, great. So let me just wrap up then. Thanks for joining the debate today, Alex and John, and big ups to James for co-hosting. So how can our listeners find all of you, starting with Alex?
The easiest way to follow our progress is Twitter. You can just search for the_matter_labs, or just ZK Sync in one word, and you will find us.
Okay, great. John?
You can find me personally on Twitter at jadler0, and you can follow the progress of Fuel Labs at fuellabs_, and the progress of Lazy Ledger at lazyledger_.org.
Okay, and how about you, James?
You can find me on Twitter at _prestwitch.
Okay, great. And maybe one last bonus question. This is something I want to get off my chest. John, why do you consider yourself a blockchain skeptic?
I would say it's mostly a remnant from the heyday when I first got into blockchain. There was a lot of, this was early 2017, but I had been exploring it around 2016. There was a lot of hype that you could use blockchain for things like supply chains.
And, I remember so that on. One.
That one?
That one year.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, so there was a lot of, let's say, interesting projects floating around during that time. I'm a skeptic that blockchain can be used everywhere that it's being claimed it can be used.
Understandable. So a recovering skeptic, if you will.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So listeners, we would love to hear from you and to have you join the debate via Twitter. Definitely vote in the post-debate poll. Also, feel free to join the conversation with your comments on Twitter. We look forward to seeing you in future episodes of the Blockchain Debate Podcast, Consensus Optional, Proof of Thought Required. Thank you, John, Alex, and James. It's been great.
Thanks so much, Richard.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Alex and John for coming on the show, and thanks again to James for co-hosting. To those of you looking for a summary, unfortunately, I won't be providing one today due to the technical nature of the debate. However, I'm sure there will be plenty of chatter on this on Twitter after the episode goes live. So don't forget to vote in our post-debate Twitter poll. If you like the show, don't hesitate to give us 5 stars on iTunes or wherever you listen to this, and don't forget to subscribe. We're planning a few new episodes and are still looking for debaters. We need someone to defend Libra. We need debaters on central bank digital currencies. We want to do an episode on miner extraction value via front-running, and we're looking for someone to argue that's a bad thing. You can find all the planned topics on our pinned tweet. Thanks for joining us on the debate today. I'm your host, Richard Yan, and my Twitter is gensol09. Our show's Twitter is blockdebate. See you at our next debate.